Okay. So last week, some of you were here last week, and I did a book review on a book called Stars at Dawn, The Forgotten Stories of Women at the Time of the Buddha. And so we had kind of a lively discussion, and it's a wonderful book. And it talks a lot about how the stories of women at the time of the Buddha had gotten somewhat forgotten or left out or changed because of the male-dominated culture that changed things. So when in the book, you know, she talks about how when there were women who were basically in charge or women who were attending, a lot of times it got changed to there were men. And the story of the birth of the Buddha, he was born in Lumbini Grove, which is a sacred place of women, especially here. But when it got changed, the men said it was just sort of random that she ended up there. So you can see what it was like. So following up on that, several people asked me if I would talk about the feminine principle in, you know, Buddhism. And I'm not sure if you know what you're getting into, because it's not really about gender particularly. It's a very ancient tradition. And I just, to start, I just want to try something with you. So for a minute, just sit and just feel your body, feel yourself in the room, feel the atmosphere. Don't edit any sensory perceptions. Just sit and try and relax. And just open to the feeling of being here, of sitting, and just let go of any agenda. How did that feel? Do you find that different than when you're usually sitting, or do you have any kind of experience of?
It's a real emphasis.
On what?
On what we do, or what? Yeah, when we meditate, mm-hmm. It's sort of right in front of our face.
It's funny, I thought it was a little more spacious in some way.
Okay, feminine principle,
like
masculine principle. The feminine principle is space.
Yes.
The masculine principle is activity.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So that was good. So, this is the feminine principle is, it's very difficult to quite to understand conceptually, because it's not a concept. It's an experience. So if at the end of this you say, I don't know what she was talking about, that's fine.
Because you got it.
Yeah, you got it. That's what the Vajra would say. I was just thinking of this funny thing. I don't know. I watched this movie a number of times. It's called As Good as It Gets? Does anybody know that Jack Nicholson, Jack Nicholson, Helen Hunt movie? Anyway, it's good. Anyway, it doesn't matter whether you know it or not. He is an writer. He writes popular fiction. Very, very successful. And apparently a lot of the women, a lot of his books have protagonists, are women. And so he goes to visit his agent. And when he's leaving, the receptionist there, very young receptionist, says to him, "Can I ask you a question?" And he says, "Yes." She says, "How do you write women so well?" And he says, "I think of a man, and I take away all logic and accountability." Now, he said that as if that was a bad thing. Uh-huh. But really, from the point of view of what we're talking about in terms of the feminine principle of spaciousness, the feminine principle is without logic. It is without, you know, trying to prove a point. And it is without accountability in the sense that it doesn't answer to anybody. The feminine principle is open space, space that is our basic nature, and it doesn't have, it's like the sky. If you look up in the sky on a cloudless day, it's just very expansive, isn't it? And you just sort of like open up. And that's kind of an experience of this. It's said that the feminine principle is spaciousness, and that when we practice, we experience this. We can experience this. Most of the time when we practice, we work with our bodies and our breaths, and the instruction is to connect with, just like what I said a few minutes ago, connect with your body, connect with the atmosphere, relax. Don't necessarily have any kind of agenda. Which immediately, and for us, when somebody says that, you know, we try and do that. But when we're sitting and we're breathing and we're meditating and we think we're supposed to be doing something, as soon as a thought comes up and we notice it, you know, and we label it or whatever we do, and then our usual approach is to suddenly feel this kind of anxiety or what you might call struggle, or we feel like, oh, I'm thinking, I shouldn't be thinking, or we feel like, you know, there's something we're supposed to be doing. We're supposed to be going back to our breath, and what does that mean? And any sense of relaxation, of just letting be, kind of gets sort of pushed away. Can you relate to this? Gets sort of pushed away. And we think, you know, I'm meditating, I'm supposed to be doing something, and that means, you know, some kind of, you know, paying attention. But we kind of solidify that, don't we? We solidify the whole thing into a project. But if we don't do that, if we just sit and relax and just open ourselves to the moment without any agenda, we can experience this kind of spaciousness. When we are sitting and thoughts arise, and the instruction is when you recognize you're thinking, you know, come back to your breathing. There is a little moment, between the thought and recognizing the thought that is completely open. It's very, you know, we don't really catch it easily. But what brings us back? Well, obviously, you know, we think we're supposed to come back. But there is a natural aspect of our minds which is just open. And when we put ourselves in the situation of, like, sitting practice, we use that. For those of you who have studied the four foundations of mindfulness, if you think of the third foundation of effort, that sudden moment when you're just back, that's the ground of the feminine principle. That openness, that just being in the present, that's the ground. Thoughts and other distractions, you know, we start to get confused, or we start to get like, we feel badly, or we think we're doing something wrong, or whatever. But thoughts and distractions, for the most part, are just like clouds in the sky. They come up because of the causes and conditions that exist. You know, moisture in the air and wind, and I mean, I don't know everything about clouds, but they are not the sky. They are not the sky, but they're these temporary things that go by. And, you know, how many times have you said or even heard from somebody else, the sun's not out today. It's cloudy, the sun's not out. The sun is always out. We don't see by cloud light. We see by sunlight. So the clouds are just sort of in front of the sky, so to speak. We feel like it's... But... there's a fundamental experience that is like the sky. It is, in fact, what the Buddha said when he attained enlightenment, the moment that he attained enlightenment, he said that I have discovered an experience that is unfettered, unburdened, unconditioned, and full of joy. And then a little while later, he said, how am I going to ever tell anybody about it? What am I going to say? Because this is not, if you try and grasp this conceptually, it's you really trying to put something in a box that can't be held. It is said that the feminine principle, this openness, this spaciousness, is... I just lost my train of thought. It's similar to the way that we talk about basic goodness in the Shambhala tradition. Basic goodness is an expression of this. Right? So we're basically good. We're wholesome, open. So, and there is wisdom and there is power or strength in it. So it's not space that's like when you're spacing out or the space of being in deep sleep where you're unconscious. One of the reasons it's called the feminine principle is because it's said to be pregnant with possibilities. If you're students of the Dharma, it's Dharma Dhatu, it's said to be pregnant with possibilities. So it is sort of the instigator in a certain way of anything goes. Like this evening, I went down to the shopping center expecting Lee to be there, and he wasn't. And so we had a miscommunication. And then I called Eric, and, you know, and then he came and got me. It was kind of like, what are you going to do? So you have two choices there. You're going to say, oh, forget it, I'm going to go home. Or you say, no, Eric, don't come, you know. No, you just, you laugh. You say, you know. It's just that kind of thing in your life. Chaos. The Vijayanara talks about this in, actually this was in a Vajrayana talk, but he says that this experience is the experience of freedom, being completely free of any conditioning. Do you know what that means when I say conditioning? We're conditioned by, condition means that, there are things that are influencing you to be a certain way. So, you know, we're conditioned by our parents, we're conditioned by our society, we're conditioned by all kinds of things. To think a certain way, to be a certain way. And that's called duality or ego or whatever you want to call it. But this spaciousness is free of any kind of condition. And that's why it's pregnant with possibilities, because anything can happen. And that's another reason why it's connected with the feminine principle, because it's considered to be somewhat unpredictable. So it's freedom, spaciousness. One way that it's also, another way that it's talked about is, it is inherent in us. It is our nature, and therefore it is unborn. It's not created. It's a natural expression of our basic nature. So it doesn't come from somewhere. Nobody gave it to us. Nobody can take it away. It's unceasing. Or as the Vijayanara said, since it's unborn, it's unceasing naturally. How could it be any other way? If you're not born, you can't not be, you can't cease. And then its nature is like the sky. So, but this space that we cultivate in our practice is the space that is not only just open space, but it's space that contains wisdom. And again, it's not the wisdom that comes from book learning, but it's the wisdom that comes from just being open and making connections. I mean, you do can't do study, you do contemplate, but then you have an insight. You understand how something is. You understand a situation. Not from any kind of political point of view, but just you know. In the Buddhist tradition, in the esoteric Vajrayana tradition, and I think in other traditions as well, in order to be a balanced person, if you're on the path and you want to be complete, you need the balance of both the feminine and the masculine. And the masculine principle is connected with action. Compassionate action, or sometimes we call it skillful action. So the male, the masculine principle, which again doesn't have to do with gender necessarily, but if you think about it, you have to have the insight, and then you have to have a way of carrying that out. And you carry that out through compassion. And the masculine part is the action of that. So if you have those two together, because if you have action without the space of insight, then you have, you know, logic. You have an opinion. And if you have insight without the action, then you don't have any way of expressing your wisdom. So you have to have the two. So men are not left out. Just, you know. So again, it's difficult to understand this because, again, it's not a concept, it's an experience of openness. In the when I was thinking about I dropped my phone in King Supers the other day, and the battery fell out, and I couldn't find it.
Oh, oh no!
Yeah, I had to call Verizon and have them send me one.
Just forget.
I was on my hands. Anyway, I was thinking about the book that we talked about last week, and about this notion of unborn, etc. And I was reminded of this story, the what's called the hagiography or the sacred biography that was told by Maya, who is the Buddha's mother. And she said that she told her husband that it was prophesied that she was going to be the mother of a very important being, a Buddha, or a very important leader. And her insight was that she needed to go off, and but only with women, to a place that, and she told the king, her husband, that she needed to go off with just women attending, no men, and that he was to have no desire for her, and men could be, you know, on the periphery, protecting, because she was a queen, so she had to have protection, but they were not to come in. So she spent months and months in this place, and they were practicing the goddess practices that they did at that time, which is a lot of singing and dancing. And she was in this retreat for months and months and months. And then one night she had a dream that a white elephant entered her side. And then she discovered that she was pregnant. So it was, what did they call it? Immaculate conception. And the baby who came into her was the size of a 6-month-old. And apparently her womb could accommodate that. And he sat up. And when he was born out of her side, not, you know, vaginally or anything. So this is the, you know, this is the legend or the tradition of that the women pass on. And I think you can see there that the unborn aspect that the Buddha was in, he was a bodhisattva, he was a very high being who was waiting for the auspicious moment to come into our world. And when he felt the time was right, he came and he entered his mother's womb. And then he exited his mother's womb, and it was, so we can't really say that he was born exactly. So there's this aspect of, if you relate that not so much to the story, whether you believe it or not is immaterial, but to the fact that we have this nature, we have this in us inherently, that we are just fully manifest without having to go through any kind of birth or any kind of creation. And so one of the reasons it's called the mother lineage or the feminine principle is because of the, of course, because of the analogy of birth, of being, you know, birth, that a woman gives birth, so therefore it's a feminine principle. So it, the feeling is of, so when you do, you know, your practice, I'm not saying that you should try and cultivate anything, but you might just relax and just see if you can just relax and let go and have a moment of non-conceptual awareness.
That's why the sense of what you talked about in terms of the environment and the sense perceptions, it seems like to me they make it, they take the place of the spot, of the thoughts. Mm-hmm. And thoughts are happening, but my attention's on those, and it makes it somewhat easier to be fully present.
Yeah. Yeah, because you're drawn out of your...
Mm-hmm. I have one other question. You never use the word intuition. I think of that somehow as...
insight?
Insight, or something leading to insight. You know, some kind of natural knowing which way to go, or what is.
Some kind of natural... Yeah, connection. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I read a lot, but I never read that word, so I didn't use it. But, and I think everyone can have intuition.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's a moment of, you know, you relax and you just trust. Where does that come from? Where does that come from? I mean, they call it, you know, people use the expression women's intuition, but just like when I had my son, I had never been around babies at all. And, you know, people kept saying to me, don't worry about it, you'll know what to do. You'll know what to do. Luckily, there's lots of books to read. But there is this kind of sense that, you know, the connection between mother and child, or, you know, any relationship, really.
Gosh, I have a lot to say.
I don't know. Did this make sense? Not sense in the conceptual sense, but did you have a feeling for what this might be pointing to?
In this last year, the teacher or the book that is I've connected with most strongly is Tara Brach and her book about radical acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, it seems to me, very strongly feminine principle stuff, where the masculine approach is to say, well, look at all the stuff that's wrong with me, and I go fix that. And she's saying, no, you know, you're okay. I mean, you can just accept where you are right now and be there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to gloss over, you know, the icky parts, but that's just part of it.
I think that's related to the the thing I've noticed over the years is that being aware of just practicing and becoming aware of things changes them, you know, without having to do. So the fixing that we go in with, if you just, when you see things that you didn't see before, they change on their own, or without any necessary volitional action. So I would guess, you know, the same thing with accepting yourself is looking to see what's there without the intention of fixing it, but it will actually change anyway.
Well, that's the process of letting go.
Yeah.
and not recognizing that if you let go, then you might see something. I mean, that's where the sort of a logic accountability thing is funny, because we're always trying to figure things out and how to fix things or how to make things work as if we had any control over anything.
There's that Pema Chodron quote, "You are the sky, everything else is just the weather." Mm-hmm. And I love that, because it ties into what you're talking about with, you know, and for me, meditation is that ongoing process of the surrender and the letting go and realizing that you can't control all that weather that's going on, and just kind of be and let it happen. And like you said, you know, you notice the underlying things that really, you know, kind of mean more than all the stuff that's spinning around, if that made any sense.
It's space that doesn't have any reference point. So anytime we try and put a reference point to it, that's not and that's why it's ungraspable. It's ungraspable by the mind.
It seems like that's partially how it came to be so so genderfied, in a sense, because there are parts of each that fit with masculine and feminine gender.
Right, right.
And they were used to point out something. And the trick is remembering that we have, and we can actually experience both those energies.
Right.
And us simultaneously, actually.
Yeah. And culturally, if I may say so, especially, maybe not so much with younger people now, I don't know, but like in my generation, anyway, our generation, women were told that they could do certain things and that they couldn't do certain other things.
Correct.
And men were told that they could do certain things and that they shouldn't do other things. And so when I got to college, and I got to my first astronomy, because I took astronomy as my science, and I was 39 years old. And I went to the, so I thought, you know, astronomy's fun, and so, but then there was all this math. And so I went to the professor and I said, you know, I went to high school many years ago and I was lousy at math then and I'm really nervous. And he said, no. He said, stop. You were told that you can't do math, so you think you can't, but you can, and I'm going to set you up with one of my teaching assistants, and he's going to show you how to do it. And he did, and then I loved it. It was really fun. It was easy, you know? It's just, it's algebra, you know? You multiply, you add, when you multiply fractions, you add the, what are those little numbers called again?
Numerators.
What, huh? 1 to the 10.
Exponents.
So if you have, you know, 2 to the 10th times 5 to the 3rd, so then you multiply the two Bain numbers and then you add the exponents and then that's the answer. What is the BFD? I don't know. It was so easy then. But part of it is just not thinking you can do it and so you get closed off. No, in my house, my husband sews, I don't. And, you know, that's sort of a switch in, you know.
We have Ted who comes here who quilts beautifully.
And I think that there is, you know, these days I think there's room, you know, for all of that. You know, the softer side of men is, it's okay to feel vulnerable and to express that. In fact, it's okay to feel any emotion and express that. So, yeah. You know, and then there are times like when my husband and I lived at this retreat center, Southern Colorado, for 16 years. And there were a lot of things. Our roles ended up being, for the most part, very traditional because I couldn't go and cut down trees for wood. And I couldn't pick up a 150-pound thing of wood. But after a few years, so he would go on retreat for a month, I could drive the four-wheel drive truck over to the wood pile. I could load up the truck with wood. I could drive it up these narrow dirt roads up to a cabin and back into these little areas and unload it. And I was very proud of myself. It's very empowering. So, yeah. So there is that side of it, too. It's like, what have we culturally?
Culturally, we sort of push towards an imbalance.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody.
Yeah, we've been pushed into an imbalance. Right. Just like the other day, we had this big loaf of bread, and I said to my mother-in-law, would you like a piece of bread? And she said, yes, and I started to cut it, and she said, no, that's something a man does.
Oh.
I said, oh, really? Watch me. Yeah, because, you know, she's 92, she comes from a very, you know, that was what you did. So we've been, culturally we have been put into these roles a lot of times where women are supposed to act a certain way and men are supposed to act a certain way or be a certain way, and it has caused a lot of difficulties. And because space, except for like in movies, is not spaciousness is not something that men are supposed to express. They're supposed to express oomph, logic and accountability. Anyway.
I think of Bill just because he's my husband. Mm-hmm. As a person who has a lot of space, mm-hmm. in a certain kind of way, in another kind of way, he's very logical and action-oriented. So he has sort of...
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's very confusing for me because they're both sort of right out there.
Uh-huh.
Just so you know.
Yeah. Well, it's almost 5 to 9. Does anybody have? I just wanna know feedback-wise if this was a a meaningful and appropriate discussion.
I like this one. I could follow it. I had a little more trouble with last. Some of the things I wasn't so aware of.
Mm-hmm. How about those of you, Michelle and Kristen, who are maybe not so familiar with this? I don't know what you're familiar with.
I'm not familiar with the book, so I didn't know.
Well, this is not from the book. This is basically sort of Buddhist and Shambhala principles that have nothing to do with the book. But if anybody, this used to be, this book was just, it was recently published, not too long ago, actually a few number of years ago, Glimpses of Space, The Feminine Principle and the Avon Principle. It was only on tape, and it was only for Vajrayana students, but now they have, I mean, it's edited, but there's not that much left out, because I listened to the tapes many, many times. So if you're interested.
So, I mean, is that book that can borrow?
I'm not sure if we have it in our library, do we?
I kind of
we have it in our library at home.
We have it at home.
Yeah. It's not something I lend. Maybe you can find it, you know, somewhere else.
Oh.
Sorry.
We have some announcements.
Yeah, I kind of figured. Go ahead.